Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Steve Pope, 30 years of volunteer and career experience, a captain on Quint 12 for the Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department. Steve is not shy on stating it wasn't until a friend noticed something off that started a change in his trajectory for the better, which was not just in the fire service, but also his home life, himself, and others around him. First Responder Golf Foundation grew from firefighter golf to bring awareness to PTSD in the first responder professions. Steve, who founded the organization, desired a way to share his story and reach as many first responders as he could through the power of social media. Steve's story is real, and so is PTSD in the first responder fields. With that, I present Mr. Steve Pope.
All right, Steve Pope from Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department. I've been on 27 and a half years now, coming up on my 28th here in October for Kansas City, Kansas, but been in the fire service for 30 years, pretty much.
Okay. And how'd you get into the fire service?
Well, I had a neighbor when I was growing up that was in the fire service, and that kind of got me the idea. Then my brother-in-law got hired by Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department, and I was trying to do the sports thing, playing baseball in college. I played a year at junior college, and I wanted to go further, but my dad got cancer. So I was taking care of him. Long story short, I knew that with what I was saying with my brother-in-law, that it confirmed that that's what I wanted to do, because it kind of is that camaraderie, that brotherhood, just like a any type of sports team. So that drove me towards it.
Okay. All right. So for those that don't know, which, I mean, we kind of briefly hit on it before we started recording, but can you tell us about the department, the size, amount of personnel, stations, things of that nature?
Okay, Kansas City, Kansas, which is separate from Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department. They're a bigger department on that side. But Kansas City, Kansas has 18 stations, 450 suppression firefighters, and we have, like, I think, six double houses. So we have that many aerials. Things are changing with the new chief that we have now that came in from D.C. So change it for the better, and we're going to be getting more aerials and more double houses is his plan for the future. So, but that's the size of the department. It's I don't know everybody on the job. I don't know how big your department is.
Right.
It's kind of hard to, especially with the new guys coming in and me not seeing them that often. Right. Whereas if you remember, when you get hired on the department, you're traveling around a lot and you get to meet people. So.
Right. Okay. But 18 stations is not really, I mean, it's not a small, department. It's still, very large in size.
Right. And it's an older city downtown. So those stations are closer together than the ones that are out west and where you're not having as much of a call volume. So you're familiar with, but.
Okay. does your department run mutual aid with Kansas City, Missouri, or no?
We do. We had a warehouse type fire a couple months back, and they came over and filled our stations, and then also the other cities that surround us come in and fill our stations.
Okay.
So I don't know how you guys refer to it, but when we go over there and mutual aid with Kansas City, Missouri, they send a bird dog with us, whether that's a safety officer or a chief, to help us, guide us into the calls. But now with GPS on our phones, it's a lot easier.
Right. Okay. You mentioned just a little bit ago that you have a new chief from DC bringing in some changes, such as two-piece houses, which I think is great for that brotherhood and camaraderie. Plus, to probably help the stations that are running more calls than others. So far, you've seen nothing but good, positive changes with that.
Yeah. Chief Rubin's been good for the department coming in. We had a bad bout with the chief for 5 years, trying to break our union. And we stuck together as a brotherhood, and he's finally gone, and new city administrator and all that come in and made changes for us. And so he's bringing in the blue card system and changing a lot of things to make us a better department in the long run, especially when he's not going to be here in a couple years. So
Right. Okay. I've definitely heard of Chief Dennis Urban. So that's pretty awesome that you could get that fresh blood, the new ideas coming in, man. There's nothing better than having a chief that's on board with making the department better. So that's awesome for you guys.
100%, because the previous chief was from another department. They wanted to break our good boy club or whatever you want to call it, because we always hired chiefs from within. And he was just trying to bust us with the city administrator. And it wasn't good mentally for all of us, and it wasn't a healthy situation. So anyway, I'm glad this new chief's here, and we outlasted that problem as a brotherhood.
Awesome. Okay. First question for you. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
Ooh, for me,
Yeah, for you.
it's being aggressive when you know someone's life is on the line, a citizen, but it's a cautious aggressiveness because as a captain, I'm looking at all sides of what could be harm to me and my crew. We want to save the citizens 100%. So that it's a cautious aggressive. That's the best way I can describe it. Aggressive when you need to be. Especially when someone's life is on the line, whether it's ours or a citizen, especially trapped in a house or a car fire or whatever it might be when we run across those calls.
Okay. All right. at what point in your career did you ever see yourself holding that captain rank, or was it something that transpired through the years of coming up within your department and seeing the good and bad officers that we all, have in our organizations?
Right. I mean, for me, it was a time I enjoyed my station where I was at, the older crew I was with, travel and do things at the lake and good friends with them. And it's one of those situations where it's you didn't want to leave that situation. But as they started to move on and retire in their career or move to a different station, it was time for me to test out to be a driver. And so I did that. And I enjoyed that job for like a year and a half, but then it fit perfect with our contract for me to test as a captain. And I really didn't want to be a captain yet. I wasn't 100% ready. And it might have been, I was only like 14 or 15 years on the job then. And so I was wanted to continue my role as a driver, but the chance there was like they were hiring, not hiring, but there was, I don't know, almost going to be 30 captain jobs opening up because they did the city brought forward a deal for health insurance to retire. So a
Okay.
lot of those older firefighters went ahead and went. So long story short, I tested out because I didn't want all these younger guys below me. And then the jobs wouldn't open up as much. And so I tested out. I'm glad I did. It's had its moments where, stress from being a captain. And honestly, I was becoming a new father at that time. I started late in my life getting married and having a child. So, and we'll touch on that later, is just the stress of it all was a lot. And anyway, that's kind of why I tested out, because the time was right. And I didn't want those younger guys coming up and holding those jobs for a long time. And then I couldn't promote down the line. So, one of your next questions might be if I want to test as a chief, and I've had like three opportunities now to do it, and I've done the acting battalion chief, and it's not for me. And that's just the
Okay.
best way to describe it. I enjoy being a captain and being around the crew and not have to, control a battalion of
Right.
people.
Right. No, I totally understand. And this next question kind of goes perfect with what you said. The question is, do you believe should there be a years of service clause for promotion? And I think I might know what you're going to say, because you mentioned earlier how you waited 14 to 15 years before you even thought about, an officer role. And I truly believe in this day and age, that's kind of a lost, I don't know if you want to say lost art, but so many are quick to promote within year two, three, four, whenever they're eligible to become officers, that they don't get that, to me, that fulfillment of knowing what it's like being a good firefighter.
I agree with that. And in Kansas City, Kansas, you can promote to a driver after 5 years. But now, that was when I was before our new contracts. And then after 7 years, you could test out to be a captain. And at 7 years as a firefighter, there was a few guys that did that. And they're good captains. They were good captains. There's people that are built for it, I will say. So now we have our own ambulance service tied in with
Right.
our fire department. So when you get hired, you have to go through that ambulance service, that ambulance side of it, I should say. And so you're not getting the experience on the streets to understand what to do as a captain. So in my opinion, for our job, there's some people who are built for it and can handle it, but there's some that when they finally are done with the ambulances, they're ready to just be a firefighter still.
Right.
But at the same time, a lot of those guys test to be a driver so they can get off the ambulance because it's a
Right.
burnout thing, man. And
Yeah.
I've never done it. Well, I did it for a year at Merriam as an EMT, but that's nothing like being a medic and having to transport them all the time.
Right.
So.
No, I get that. And it's funny because, your department's not the only organization that has that type of system. And I mean, talking to other guys about that, a lot of them see it as unfortunately a way out. They do their time, they get beat up, and as soon as they get the chance to promote out of that, they're gone. And it's, damned if you do, damned if you don't, on the department the way they operate. But I mean, I could see that as a, I mean, that's kind of a deterrent.
No, 100%. So it is what it is. Every department is different. And, like when a new chief comes along, things might change. So, and then new contract negotiations. So.
Okay. One thing I do need to ask you, because I've heard this before too. So, a lot of people I've interviewed mention things in their contract that relates to the job. Is that something like your union goes over?
Yeah, in the sense of what do you mean by goes over it?
Okay, for me, I live in North Carolina. North Carolina is a right to work state. So pretty much like the department sets the like this is what we're gonna do. It's black and white. Where if you have, I guess if you live in a state where I don't want to say like the union oversees or overpowers the department, like I always hear a lot of negotiations that come to the table where these are the rules, and most departments or some departments go, okay, yes, we'll abide by that. I'm just trying to figure out how that works.
Well, it's all negotiation, and so the city might come to our union because we're getting ready. We just started our negotiations because our contract ends at the end of this year. They'll start. City will bring to the table, hey, we want to cut out this with the sick time, or you're not building up this much, or you can, whatever it might be. It's negotiated. So there's things that our department can still do that the union can't stop. So, for example, as long as we don't lose any personnel, he could shut down a station and move that personnel to another station. We're not losing personnel. Yeah, it might piss off the commissioner, it might piss off the citizens in that district, but he could do that. And the union could bring it up to the local news and say, look, we're putting a hole in the city, but he could still do that and have an
Okay.
argument back to say, no, our response times are still fine. So yeah, it's a lot of give and take. And something I always like to argue about, if the city was, because we went without 5 years without a contract and without a raise. And we got all the back pay after this last contract and everything. So that was nice. But point I'm making is I've always said, well, because we do acting drivers and acting captains, so you get paid for writing out a title. Do you guys do that in your job?
We have like so me, I'm a senior firefighter. So when my engineer's off, I am the acting driver. It is a tested position.
Okay, so however many years you've been on the job for us, you get that pay differential if you go up to that spot for that shift. If I'm off, my driver moves over and a back end guy can drive, and they each get compensated for the difference between their driver job and my captain job.
Okay.
So I've often argued that the city's coming to not give us something we want or take something away. And again, it's a give and take. I say take away the acting pay money. Because then they're going to have to pay overtime for a captain to replace my spot. I figure that's a good argument when you're arguing with the city, because they're spending more money on overtime than they would on the acting money.
Right.
But so that's my point about it's a give and take. Maybe I wouldn't be a good contract negotiator for the union because I would come with that thing every year.
Okay.
But anyway.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, let's fast forward a little bit. You get promoted to company officer. What was that like? And I ask that because, it's very easy for most departments when they have a company officer position available, they test you on the skills and knowledge. Like, all right, we want to make sure he or she can run a fire scene, communicate with other crews, incoming crews, things of that nature. But when it comes to the personal side, like, hey, the management of people, do you see an area that departments you think can improve on that part? Because we're very good to like, if I was an assessor, I'm going to assess how you run a fire scene. We are very good at that, but I
Right.
feel like we're lacking on the part of, well, you might have a member of your crew go, hey, Cap, I have a substance abuse problem or a drinking problem, whatever the case may be. Like, have they helped you, or who has helped you in cultivating that area of being a company officer?
Yeah, back when I tested out, it was just you listened and learned, and now we're getting better with acknowledging that we do need to have these company officer trainings, and they do that now. Well, at least with the previous chief, and I think they're going to continue it with promotions moving forward. That you have to go through like a, excuse me, a week or two class, going over the protocols, going over the SOGs, and so you have a better understanding. Now, as you mentioned it with the assessment, and you're going through those assessment testing processes. They had, at least in ours, they had one citizen and one personnel thing that you had to go through. And they bring these actors in to act their role, and so you have to respond accordingly and get graded on that. And I think, if I remember right, mine was this old house, and the homeowner was upset that we broke all the windows in this old house. And how do you manage that? And I think if I remember right, I said, all right, sir, here's what we'll do. We got the company coming in to board up your house. 1-800 board up is here in Kansas City. I don't know if it's in North Carolina there, but anyway, I know they're across the country. So what we'll do is we'll come over in the morning and make sure everything's, buttoned up for you just like you'd like, until the insurance company can get out here and help you out. So, I've heard of other people having ones where an actor comes in and says, you cheated with my wife, and coming into the station, and you got to handle that. So,
Right.
and then I think the personnel one I had was a new firefighter at a station, and I was the new captain. So a young firefighter, and the other two were old heads, and they didn't want to do training. They hated doing it, and he was wanting to quit the job, actually. That was the actor. And so you had to talk him through it all and say, hey, I'll talk to the crew, and we'll do some more training. I'm new to being a captain here, just like you are on the job. So let's work together to be better. And so, there's different assessments like that, but our job at that time, good old boy type of club at times, an older department like we are. Heck, we're local 64, so that tells you
Right.
how old we are. And you had that older head mentality, as we called it back in the days, that it was their way, but now, especially, we'll talk about it later with my foundation, we're talking about things a lot more at the kitchen table, because, as we can solve the world problems at the kitchen table at a fire station. So, but I wish they would do a better job at helping you be better at handling calls with citizens,
Okay.
whatever it might be. Even though I think we see it a lot, so we kind of get better just by experience.
Right.
But especially with personnel, I think that would be a bigger help.
Okay. All right. For promotion to company officer, are you in favor for a simulated computer fire scenario or a scenario where they take you to like a training ground with a training tower and they give you a scenario where you're graded in real time with real companies?
Yeah, that second one. That's interesting. Because I know with the blue card stuff that we've done, our low rise policy, they brought us into training and, they had buildings set up on a table that one of them looked like a Walmart or something. And they had the fire, fire trucks, the Hot Wheels. And so you had to, when you were training with them, you had to place the vehicles properly and then talk about, what your role is with the blue card system, and not everyone going in and being freelance and having a union meeting inside a house when with 15 people in there when there needs to only be about four. So I like that second one. But I see value in both of them though. Like showing a picture and and that's what they did in our assessment center. I'm not sure what they do now with the new captains, but I do like that idea. Because to me, it's like our drivers go through the practical exam. I like that practicality with the company officers too.
So you mentioned it, and I'm going to ask you, and remember, this is like just personal, just two guys talking, even though it's being recorded. My department utilizes Blue Card. I'm not an officer, but I know a little bit about it because, I listen to the size ups and things of that nature. Blue Card, is that new for you guys? And which it is, of course, because you mentioned it. But my question to you is, what are your thoughts on it?
So when I worked at Merriam for that year, 27 and a half years ago, they did something similar back then that, but it wasn't called Blue Card. And so it was like two in, two out, as we know, with NFPA and all that. And you held to that. I mean, you weren't all just rushing in. So, those two guys were in there fighting a fire, two were outside ready to go relieve them, or if they went down, that was before, RIT teams and all that. So, and then when you came out of the fire, you went to rehab and getting your blood pressure checked and Gatorade, whatever, the drink of choice is for some departments. But now the blue card is kind of it's taken from what I'm used to. And so I see it because like you heard me joke earlier about a union meeting inside a house, everyone's standing on the stairs trying to get upstairs. Why? And so that's what we can be like we used to be like, and we're getting away from that now. So I like the blue card system in that regard. I'm still getting used to it, especially, the A, B, C, D. I like to say front, back, east, west. And that's my old head mentality that I just got to get used to those calls, listening to them. So whenever there's a fire now, I definitely get on, another part of the city, I'll go listen to that TAC channel so I can become better with that. So, like for example, with me being a truck company, even though we're a Quint, we are a truck company on a fire. Unless the pumpers are out that are near our district, then we can convert to a pumper with my decision. And then as soon as the first pumper's there, we convert to our truck work. So the truck, first truck on the scene, well, if there's no chief there giving us a command, then we can make a decision if we need to rescue, ventilate, but we got to tell our role over the air. And then when you're done, you come back out and say, we're done waiting for another assignment, whatever that might be. So I like that. It controls the fire ground better. So our whole department's getting better at it.
The terminology was a little weird, I'm sure, because you mentioned it. You have Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta on deck, primary search, fire control, things like that. So, I mean, I remember I used to work part-time at a different department, and they would always kind of give me hell about it. They're like, what's on deck? Like, what the hell does that mean? And I'm like, well, that just means you're in the front ready to go. To be the RIT team or whatever the case may be. And it's just funny hearing like change in the fire service. A lot of guys are like, why are y'all doing this? I mean, I didn't make the decision to do it. I'm just telling you, this is what we're doing. But I always like talking to other individuals whenever they mention Blue Card. I'm like, oh, let me ask them what they, how their department likes it, the terminology, and things like that. So, as far as recruitment and retention, What do you think the fire service can do better? And what do you think that we are doing good at for 2024, trying to get new people into the fire service? Because we all know most departments are seeing a decline in applications.
So in Kansas City, Kansas, you have to live in the county that we are in to even apply.
Oh,
Or
even.
not, I'm sorry, to not even apply, to stay on the job. So they give you like a year to move once you get hired.
Oh.
And there's been people that don't move and they end up firing them. So that's one of our deterrents. And this new chief is trying to get rid of that residency clause and push it out to like 30 miles out further, which I don't think is a bad thing. But the negative is, then you don't have those people living in our county and voting for our city council people that help with our contracts. So, having said that, that's one of our deterrents. So, people don't want to come live in Wyandotte County anyway. So, we can get paramedics from other colleges, and then, I don't want to work in Wyandotte County. I'd love to run your type of calls Kansas City, Kansas runs, but I don't want to live there. That's what I should have said. So there's that deterrent. But what we're doing now is we're giving an incentive for our medics. We didn't have differential pay until, 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And it's a 9%. It's not up to the regular standard around the country, the average or whatever it might be, but it's a start for us. And so now we're paying for people to go to medic school.
Okay.
And it's like a contract for 5 years or something. If they don't stay that long, then they have to give money back or something. I can't remember all the details, but yeah, there's several of our EMTs that get hired under that agreement that the school's paying for them to go to medic school. Plus, they're giving them the time off. They don't have to find trade time to do it. It's just the way it is to because we were short-handed on medics. Our medics were leaving the job during COVID, and that was before we got the contract. And once the contracts happened, we're one of the highest paid people departments in the metro area of Kansas City. So
Okay. Do
those are the
your
main deterrents, is having to live in Wyandotte County. And then, as like you mentioned, it's just a decline in people applying, because even the application process, there's not as many as it used to be.
Right. Okay. Do your apparatus, do your suppression apparatus have medics on it too?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Every, I believe almost every rig, except a couple of the trucks.
Okay.
So,
Is it a requirement for promotion to have your medic or no?
no. But
Okay.
once you get promoted, you're still utilized as a medic, but they try to back you up with a medic so you can do your role better. So, like a captain, because we've been so shorthanded, a medic captain, he might have to be the medic on the scene too. So he's got to hand the scene safety over to someone on his crew, whether it's the driver, for example, who's used to riding the seat. So until we can get more of these EMTs being medics, then we're going to have to keep doing that. And that's just, I've heard that from around the country. It's the same way in a lot of places,
Right. I
meaning,
mean,
they're shorthanded medics.
right. Shorthanded medics, shorthanded firefighters. One of the things is some parts of the country are just filling seats with bodies. They don't necessarily want to do the job. They're here, and and from the boots on the ground, their perspective is they see that as a negative because they want to have people that actually want to be there for the job, not just to, I'm trying something out, I'm just filling the seat. Because we do have people that will venture to the fireside, but it won't be for them and they won't leave.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So one of the other problems for us is, years ago, we had an ambulance service with the fire department, and they weren't getting the paid the same with the FMO, the Fair Labor Standard Act laws. And then they sued and won. And then that's how we got them on the pumper. So all those medics from that ambulance system came to be on the pumpers and trucks. So long story short, we've had a lot of people that just want to come here and work on the ambulances, and they have to be cross-trained. And so there's a deterrent too, is we're not bringing in just ambulance personnel that want to do that job, because the diversity of calls that we run with our crime rates not the greatest. The highways that run through our city, they're seeing car wrecks and, so shootings, stabbings, and all that that ambulance people wouldn't mind running. So if we could maybe change that system, we could get a lot more personnel to come here. But
Yeah, for sure. Okay. One thing that attracted me to your profile was the helmet cam videos that you post. You guys seem to have your fair share of jobs. It's fair to say you guys see fire pretty regularly.
I get those helmet cams from a couple guys that give me their footage, and
Okay.
I know it brings interaction for what I'm trying to do with the foundation mission, especially with firefighters, and they dig deeper into the profile like you and know that I'm posting these. People like to watch them, even citizens. Hey, they might go over and realize, hey, this guy's working with mental health stuff too, using the game of golf. So that's why I'm posting those. Honestly, I think our policy is we can't do stuff like that. But until they tell me to stop it, and if they don't understand that I'm doing it for the main mission of mental health awareness, then they'll look like the bad guy. But I'd take them down if they asked because I still got 6 years left. So.
I got you. I got you. I 100% get you. So the next topic I hear I want to talk about is leadership, company officer, chief officer. You're a company officer, so if I were to be a new firefighter coming into your crew, what are your expectations of me, and what can that firefighter expect of you?
So it's funny because we have an academy right now. We just had one come out, and we get a lot of those newer firefighters coming into my station because it's a 3-year-old station, and we have one of the ambulances there, so they get shipped in there a lot. And then every now and then, one will get sent in to be on my rig on Quint 12. And so when I know they're new with me, I approach them that morning, and so a lot of them, which is a good thing, they come up and ask, "What's expected of me, Captain? What do you want from me today?" And I go over the role on a structure, excuse me, on a structure fire with them and let them know what's expected and what we will be doing. And again, like we talked about the blue card, it's dynamic. So, just make sure your headset's on so you can hear what I'm telling you. And one thing I like to ask them is, "What do you expect from me?" Because some of them want to do some training. And so I ask him, "What do you expect from me as a captain, as a mentor?" So I always like to ask that and just see what their answer is. And the majority of them, want that training, whether it's doing aerial, whether it's doing ladder throwing, whether we're flowing water somewhere with a pumper through our aerial. So yeah, they enjoy doing that stuff. And I try to, we have a lot of apartments in my district, and a lot of, a big shopping area. And I don't know, before I came out there, I wasn't aware of what wall hydrants were at these shopping centers. So these outdoor shopping centers that are around the country now. And so you take this T bar and you put in your high rise. And so each one of these pods of businesses in this district, there's like eight pods of businesses, whether it's movie theater, whether it's a shoe company or a bookstore, whatever it might be, restaurant. And you hook in with your high rise pack and you turn the valve on, and it's amazing how much water power you get. And I didn't know about that before I got out there. And how are you going to tactically fight a fire doing that? Well, I went through and turned all of those on with the help of the security from that shopping district. And what we found was the water looked like Texas tea coming out because they haven't opened them for a while. It's their hydrants. It's not ours as a city. But then we found that one of them wouldn't turn on. So then you got to think, okay, where's the closest next wall hydrant, and how much line do we need to get over to this shoe store that's on fire? Or where you park the fire truck, are you going to have to lay in with like a 3-inch and then gate the Y and get the hand lines? So that's the type of stuff I like to take those young firefighters out to see and do, because they might get sent into that station on overtime, or a captain gets sent into my station on overtime and doesn't know that district like that. So those are the important things I like to walk through those apartments and see how would we tactically fight a fire in this building. Where would we set up ladders if, Mary and Johnny are up on the third floor? Are we using a 35 footer, or are we taking up the Quint ladder? Are we raising it to get them? So just things like that to keep your mind fresh on what you might need to do. You just, as you know, every fire scene's it's different. So
All right. I did forget to ask, what's your minimum staffing on your apparatus?
right now, until we can get more personnel hired, but his overall goal, this new chief, is to have four on the pumpers or engines. We call them pumpers. And every aerial has to have four, as well as every, we have two rescue rigs and they have to have four. So those are the minimum
Oh, that's
as
a
of now.
minimum. Okay, as of now. Okay, so that's good. So you never ride with three. It's always at least four.
Well, on the pumpers, it's three right now, but
Okay,
with the
gotcha.
new system, when we get more hired, because he's wanting to do a sales tax thing, and so that way we can have the money to buy the rigs, build new stations, and hire personnel to do that minimum of four on each rig. And I think he might extend it to six on the rescues. I don't know. So.
So, with you being a Quint, if you alluded to it earlier, if you guys arrive first and there's no close pumper nearby, you will act as a pumper, in the meantime, because you do have water. But when you arrive on scene, you guys primarily do truck company ops.
So the last fire that I ran, and at my district, we don't run a lot because they're newer homes, and but we will run further east, which is the older homes. And the last one we ran there, we got up on the roof, and our job was to ventilate and cut that hole, and then come back down and ask for our assignment. And then they sent us back in, and we were pulling ceiling in the kitchen, and it was double drywall ceiling. One was like 5/8 inch over, I can't remember the other size, but it was hard to get through with the pike poles. And so we did our role. We're leaving. I tell command that we're coming back out to rehab, and we're walking out. Next thing you know, we get clobbered by that drywall. Well, I look up after I was dazed. I looked up, and there's a foot dangling from the rafters. So one of our rookie firefighters was up there and slipped on the rafter, knocked that ceiling down on me and my crew, and it jammed my neck hard. I had to go. I couldn't feel my all the way down my left arm. So everything's fine, but it's just, that's how dynamic fires are. I'd like to tell you a fun story that, yeah, we, but no, just a mishap with the guy slipping, and that's the type of thing that you never know. It could be paralyzed or really concussed. And so, yeah, as you know, this job, even if it's a dangerous situation, we come out fine, but then something simple like that. So.
All right. And on a structural box assignment, how many stations are you getting on the initial?
Ooh, now it's a lot. So we're getting four pumpers, two aerials, and the rescue, a fire assigned ambulance. So they're there actually fighting a fire with another crew. So they get assigned to another pumper. And then there's a box that's waiting for citizens or us to get injured. And then you have the chief, the battalion chief. Sometimes the actual shift commander will show up just to assist, because the blue card system's a lot of moving parts. And then you have our safety officers now drive our battalion chiefs. So they were coming to the scene, but now they're together to work together. So, but that's about it. It used to be like three and two. So three pumpers and two aerials. And I put a lot of fire out with that personnel too. So it sometimes you can have too much, but as you know, you can always turn people away.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's
Okay.
like just like the food in the kitchen. You don't lay up short,
All
right?
right. All right. Man, I had a question. It was right there, and then I lost it. I'm sure it'll come back. I'm sure it'll come back to me. All right. I was going to hit on, man, I hate whenever that happens.
I know, I'm there too, brother. How old are you?
I'm 39.
All right, well, you're not 53 yet, so it
Oh,
can
man, it'll come back. It'll come back. All right. So let's talk about communication. In your opinion, how paramount is communication? Do organizations need to have to be successful? Because at least in my experience, the most successful companies, organizations, leaders, their communication is paramount. It's top notch. And you know, with firemen, if you don't tell them what they want, they'll leave it up to their interpretation, which will go many different ways.
Yeah. So with the new Chief Reuben, we do Zoom meetings every morning at 8:30
Okay.
with all the companies. And you go over, we check our own hydrants. I don't know if you guys do. So you go over stuff like that. You go over, check your emails, this and that. And but that's there's also the problem is we get so many emails with memos and stuff. It's like I can't keep something straight what I just read.
Right.
Whereas before it was those chiefs brought the memos to the station and we put them up on our bulletin boards. So you're walking by them and reading them and you knew which ones were really important because they were there on display. But also the negative there is you might have a captain that really didn't care and that gets lost in the shuffle and doesn't put it up. So anyway, the email system is good, but it's also bad because a lot of stuff gets lost in the shuffle. It's street closures and stuff like that. Okay, well, which ones are open now? And because it's hard, it's all convoluted. I don't know how it is with other people you've talked about, but it can just be a little overwhelming, at least in my opinion. And that's why my driver's been on as long as me, and we communicate well together. So there's that kind of answer to your question. Is because what I might not remember and he might not remember with us communicating and working well together, that I think we do a good job because of that. And like I said, communication is important from the top to the bottom and as well from the bottom to the top. As you know, chain of command, sometimes when you're trying to communicate it back up, it doesn't flow so good. And they don't like it going back up sometimes.
Same problems everywhere. It's just
It is.
different departments,
It
but
is.
I
I
got
played
you.
in a golf tournament in Vegas with this professional firefighters, Canadian, US and Canadian professional firefighters tournament. And I met a lot of guys from DC and the East Coast, mainly Toronto, even there's Canadian guys there. All the same stories, all the same problems, whether it's city council, whether it's administration with the fire. Whether it's personnel, injuries, it's all the same across the country.
Definitely. Okay. All right. so you've hit on it. So let the listeners know how the First Responder Golf Foundation happened. Like, what triggered, I always like to call it, what tripped that breaker for you to go, I have an idea, I'm going to put it in motion, let's do it.
Well, so it first of all, it started in 2020. But if we can step back in time, I got married. I'm 53 now. I got married when I was 39. I had my own son when I was 41, but I have a stepdaughter who is now 19. So all that was new to me, being a captain, a family. They moved up from Western Kansas, from like 5 hours away from Kansas City, and or a tornado tore up their town. And so they're coming into a situation that they're not comfortable with. And here I'm becoming a captain and then already had probably 15, 16 years on the job. And like I alluded to earlier, I didn't feel like I was had stress. I loved my crew. It was fun. But what I've come to find out, which is called allostatic load, it's the buildup of the things we see over time, the job, whether it be personnel, whatever it might be with the profession. And I was taking things out on them, triggers. what happened with them. I'd yell at them, get in their face, and I wasn't happy about it, Danny. I hated it, to be quite honest. But I didn't realize what was changing me or what was the cause. So in 2017, my buddy Ryan, that I play golf with, who was a paramedic on Kansas City, Kansas, he had just went through our peer support training like a week or so before. I opened up to him on the golf course, of all places. And I said, "Hey, man, I just blew up with my son, Riker, who was 4 years old at that time, back in 2017. And for no reason, Ryan." And he goes, "Steve, you don't realize what this job's done to you then, do you?" And that was like a light bulb that came on. And I started looking back at the path of how I was with my wife and our daughter and then my son, and how I was triggered by the stupidest of things. But what I have learned, because I've interviewed counselors for the YouTube channel, I've gone to counseling myself. And so when you leave a job that you are in control of things for the most part, you take orders, you do them. And when you come home, you're trying to find that semblance of order because you might not have slept. You might not, you might have saw a couple things that, you can't get rid of in your mind, even though they didn't affect me, didn't give me nightmares. I wasn't thinking of suicide. If it wasn't for Ryan, I never would have went on that journey from 2017 to 2020 to start what I did. And in that meantime, I was being more self-aware of bringing that stuff home, because I recognized I was bringing that anger and triggerness home. Hypervigilance, I know for me, a loud bang, I look a little bit, We had a teacher in my high school that was a Vietnam vet, and people would throw books on the ground just to see him hit the ground. So I'm not that hypervigilant, but there's things that a loud door slamming, I'll look. I feel more than other people do. I don't know, but it is part of the PTS signs and symptoms. So during that journey, I'm thinking, I know there's other firefighters, and at that time, firefighters, because I didn't have an inkling to understand about police officers, and I'll get to that, how it grew into the First Responder Foundation. But I was a high school golf coach from 2016, and I just gave it up to spend more time with this and family. But I said, there's more firefighters out there with the same struggles as me. I know there is. So in 2020, I thought, I'm still coaching, I'm looking through YouTube, trying to get lessons for them to understand what I'm trying to teach these high school golf kids, because what I might say they might not resonate with them. So I thought, man, I'm gonna do something on social media. And all I had was Facebook. I looked at YouTube and watched videos and golf stuff, but I said, I'm gonna start a YouTube channel, call it Firefighter Golf, start an Instagram, share things on Facebook about my story, which I just described to you, the anger management issues. And come to find out, Danny, I grew up, with my counseling, I grew up in an alcohol environment. Both my parents were alcoholics. And so that plays a role in how I reacted with the things I've seen on this job. And, it affects everyone different. I hope to God no one goes through what I was going through. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to hit people early in their careers. Because if I would have known this stuff 27 years ago, coming out of the academy, like you alluded to, with just things we could train with our company officers, I go and talk to our fire academy. I'm talking to them next on this Friday coming up about the foundation, and telling my story to them, and tell them I'm here for you. If you're a golfer, want to learn the game, the foundation's there to do all that for you, and pays for your rounds of golf. But so I started doing the YouTube stuff and the Instagram, just getting my story out there. I called them Real Talks. And I had spouses contact me and say, "Your story's my husband or my wife." It's exactly how they act. So I knew it could do what I thought it could do. And then we had a couple guys on our job die by suicide in the metro area. And I did more Real Talk videos, and more people started seeing them around the country and commenting in on Facebook and everything. So I knew it could have the power of the good of social media. So what I do with the YouTube is I'm filming, actually tomorrow I'm interviewing another psychologist clinician that I've come in contact with. I want to do it at my fire station in front of the fire truck. And I got questions for her, just like you have for me. She's going to talk about allostatic load, sleep deprivation, how things relate to police and fire, the same but different. So the police can have a better understanding. So in that social media blitz, a golf pro in Kansas City saw what I was doing. And he said, "Hey, Steve," he contacted me through Instagram, say, "I'd like to meet with you. I got an idea." So it was at the height of COVID, 2020.
Okay.
So we still met for lunch, and he across the country with the PGA of America, there's 41 sections. So the Midwest section is what he's president for the PGA Hope, which is what they do for the military. He goes, "Why don't we do something for first responders, include the cops and nurses, doctors, especially in the ERs?" I said, "Yes, I'm all for that." I even had it on my Firefighter Golf YouTube about, if you're police, military, contact me. Let's play some golf. It's what if this is all about is to have fellowship and spread the word and the mission, and also nip it in the butt before someone does have problems and they get divorced or alcohol or drugs or whatever it
Right.
might be. Especially suicide, right, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
So he said it was height of COVID, so we can never get the Midwest Section Board to meet and introduce me and see if they'd want to maybe start something like the PGA Hope. Well, time went on. He said, "Steve, go ahead and start your own thing. You got the blueprint of what we talked about, and that is getting first responders on the golf course, and we pay for it. We host a golf tournament every August, to help us have the funds to take first responders on retreat trips, especially to Phoenix in February, where we treat them to a memory of fellowship and golf that they probably never would have experienced. We brought two wildland firefighters on this last trip in February. Andy is 74 years old, and his buddy Bill are 72, but Andy has terminal cancer. And think about that with those wildland guys. They're breathing in all that smoke, and they can't have breathing apparatus while they're out there in the wild.
Right.
And hearing his stories and how he's so resilient, a good young man. He's a good man. He did it for like 43 years or something to that effect. And
Damn.
he was high up there in the wildland. He went to New Zealand, Russia. He did a lot of places, but he's coming back in August for this tournament, and he's going to speak in front of everyone so they can know that this is what your money goes towards. We're trying to bring awareness to cancer for firefighters. So it grew into something that I never imagined, from a little YouTube channel just trying to get my story out there into a foundation, where we now take first responders on retreat trips and get them out on the golf course to get better and share my love for this game and how it, when I'm out there in nature, as frustrating as golf is, I find peace.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to do is, one, the awareness level thing with the foundation, and then provide an outlet. If I was a fisherman or a hunter, I probably would have called it the First Responder Sporting Club or something like that. And we would have got more reach maybe that way. But this is my niche, and I'm just trying to share my story and help as many as I can stop from dying by suicide and then ruin their families, divorce, what, like we mentioned before. So there's a synopsis of what it became and where it's at right now. We got some exciting things moving forward because we've connected with some companies that are sending us shirts that we can give to our first responders on retreat trips. And we connected with a TikTok Instagram star that's a caddy that ironically it resonates with him what we're doing because he had a friend that died from cancer who was a firefighter
Okay.
in British Columbia, Canada. So he's trying to help us grow, and he raised money for us in Myrtle Beach. We took two police officers to Myrtle Beach to meet him and do some content for his stuff. And that's out. My video is out with him right now. I'm wearing his pink and purple outfit, so it looks like Grimace from McDonald's. But it's fun content. He's got some wonderful ideas for us. So I'm excited that moving forward that we might have the money to expand this thing around the country more. I don't know where it could grow.
Right.
We have a cop on board now that is pushing the social media side for me because it was just a lot. You get ghosted a lot.
Oh, yes.
You know that.
Yes.
And it's frustrating. You're trying to do what you're doing, spread the good of the job and keep people motivated because mental health can make you become cynical in this job
Absolutely.
and not want to be a better firefighter for your crew or yourself or your family or the citizens. And I'll be honest, it did for me during that time frame before 2017, for like if I look back like 3 or 4 years, because I had a crew member say, "Are you okay?" He would ask me that in the morning sometimes. Well, looking back, we've talked, and he goes, yeah, I could see you were changing in your eyes. And I, the one time he asked me, I said, would you quit fucking asking me that? Excuse my French here for wherever
No, you're
term
good.
you can
Yeah.
beep this, but he was right. He noticed it. And we've
Right.
talked about it since then. And I said, you know, Dan, I could see it in your eyes too. You're changing a little bit. But no, that good heart to heart's good. Good for the soul. And so my hope just through social media is just so people see what I'm trying to do. It's real. It's a real thing. It affects everyone different. And it's probably affecting people that don't even realize it or don't want to realize it because they're afraid of being vulnerable.
Yep. And you know, firemen, man, we hate that angle of, you know, I have a problem, I need help. We don't want to admit that because, you know, I don't know if it's just trained in us that we are the helpers, but sometimes the helpers need help too.
Yes.
And you definitely need, like you said, that good coworker that was like, hey man, like there's something going on with you. And I feel like sometimes the issue lies where if the person that needs help is higher ranking than you, you might kind of feel intimidated-ish, like you don't want to overstep. But sometimes we need to look out for our officers, our chief officers, because yeah, they may be high in rank, but at the end of the day, they still put their pants on like I do. You know what I mean? Like they're still human, and we need to realize that or see the signs before, like you said, you alluded to, it's too late where you walk home, you walk inside your house, and there's a letter waiting on you that says, me and the kids are gone, or just your spouse or significant other is gone. That's when it's too late. So I love what you're doing. And if anybody wants to look more into it, how do they find you?
So there's several ways you can follow Firefighter Golf on Instagram. We've changed the name of the YouTube channel to First Responder Golf, so it more aligns with, you know, the foundation there. So when we're reaching out to influencers or departments around the country, we can say, hey, do you have anybody that might want to be on our YouTube channel? And when you're saying Firefighter Golf, but you're talking to them through the First Responder Golf emails or the Instagram, so that we change it to First Responder Golf. So you have the Firefighter Golf Instagram, you have First Responder Golf Foundation Instagram. That's how you can reach us. You have firstrespondergolf.org, which is the website for the foundation. And that's one way we'll see the events that we have coming up or how to contact me. And then yeah, go watch the YouTube channel. You'll see a lot of videos of me playing golf, some police, some firemen, just having fun matches, good banter. But inside that those videos, at the beginning, it might be me talking about the mission and how I use the game of golf, like we explained just a little bit ago. And it's always just trying to use that social media to spread that awareness. So, you know, some people might see the Instagram thing a pop across or the Facebook post pop across, and it. I've had people contact me. I mean, you found me through.
Instagram.
So there you go. And so it's doing what I thought it could do, the good part of it. Obviously, we all know there's bad with it. And but yeah, that's how people can get a hold of us. And so what we do, just to let first responders know, is especially in the Kansas City metro area, and as you heard me say earlier, we do retreat trips. And next year we plan on the February 1 in Phoenix, as always, because we have a couple people that host us down there and pay for the rounds of golf because it's expensive that time of year in February to play golf down there. We plan on probably going back to either Myrtle Beach or Pinehurst, so up in your part of the world there again, to network with this tournament. And they raised us $3,000 down there in Myrtle Beach. So, but that way we can also take first responders to experience the type of golf that they probably never would in Pinehurst or wherever. I don't think we play Pinehurst, a little pricey, but you just never know who might want to help us. So locally we get first responders on the golf course and we pay for it. We also have a family event coming up this Saturday, where we're getting the families out playing miniature golf and hitting the driving range. And as you know, families live the trauma too that we bring home. So
Absolutely.
that's the idea, is let's treat the families to coming out and playing miniature golf. It's not real golf. We have the driving range there, and we can teach you. So we're gonna do that again in the fall because we're running into graduation parties and stuff. So there
Right.
might be as many first responders coming. Plus, this is our first test at it. And so then we plan on probably going to DC next June. We connected with this top 100 golf teaching pro through Instagram, and he wants to be a part of what we're doing. And we're going to bring like six Kansas City area first responders to DC, and then we're going to try to get others from across the country to come in that want to learn in a
Okay.
golf clinic setting, and then we're going to
Okay.
play golf too. But we're also going to go not just golf, we're going to go tour like the Smithsonian stuff after we have a golf clinic. So we got
Right.
a lot of things moving forward, but again, we need people to help donate. And the website, you can donate there. There's a link there to do it through PayPal. But hopefully we do have those connections coming forward where people are going to want to connect. But first responders, my brothers and sisters out there, it's about awareness, first of all. Stay self-aware is what we like to say. And you got to do it. You can go see a doctor all you want, but when you walk away from him or her, you have to do it.
Absolutely.
You have to want to do it. Be vulnerable. It's okay.
No, definitely, definitely. And I mean, there's a good number of firefighters out there that love the game of golf. It's not like football where you have an opponent, man. Golf is nice and easy. You're out there in the fresh air, beautiful courses. So I mean, I like it. The other day, my wife took me for our anniversary thing. We went and did Top Golf.
Okay.
I've never done that before, and I thought it was pretty damn cool. I'm like, all right, like I'm not a golfer, but I mean, I enjoyed it. I definitely,
Yeah.
because it was something new that I've never done.
I agree. And just, I agree. Yeah. It's just however, whatever way we can use it. We do indoor simulator stuff during the winter here in Kansas City, and that helps provide that outlet and stay connected to the game. And we work with people during those events and try to get them better. Because it's a tough sport.
Oh, yeah, definitely ain't easy. I mean, it looks easy on TV, but no, there's definitely a finesse to it for sure. Because I couldn't
Yes.
tell you at first how many times I kept my eye on the ball, and when I swung, I hit the turf instead of the ball, and I was like, oh, okay, it's not as easy as it looks.
Yes.
But no, I love what you're doing. I mean, I think every firefighter needs to have an outlet, like. Not that's not just fire related. It is very important to leave that, like when you leave it and go find something else to do, whether it's fishing, hunting, golfing. So I love what you're doing because you're just trying to spread awareness and positivity with the job. So man, thank you for what you do and the help that you bring to others for sure.
Well, thanks, Danny. And look, just one, if I could just touch,
Sure.
wife's a teacher, and she didn't understand her stress she was bringing home either. And so we were two bulls, two rams butting heads. But what it's done, every walk of life has stress. So she was bringing her stress home after I had already decompressed from golf. And then it was, boom, triggered me, which would cause a lot of my outburst. So it's about letting everyone know that stress is real, because I never thought it was. I was going along great on this job, thought it no stress, but it builds up over time and life gets affected by it. Wonderful job. I love it. Wouldn't want to do anything different. But it's a real thing. You can probably still picture calls that you ran in your head, and they stay there. And it's just the simple truth of it. It's that allostatic load of all of that builds up over time, and it causes friction in your life somewhere. That's how I think it says 30 to 40% of first responders have PTS. I say it's more.
I can see that. I can see that. And I truly believe it's all on the individual on if how you want to combat that. Because it is very easy to come home and just little things set you off, snap. And I mean, at the end of the day, you're not helping anybody. So if you can find an outlet, find that person you can talk to decompress. But then also, like you alluded to, my wife is not in any, she's not in the emergency services field at all. So let her compress by if she just needs to vent. Like it needs to be a two-way street. You can't have it your way where you want to vent to her and or whoever your significant other is and not allow them to do that to you. You can't do that. Like you have to
Right.
be be in there, on the same page. So I totally get it, 100%.
My wife now understands that she has to come home at times and sit in the garage on her phone for maybe 30 minutes before she comes in because she teaches second grade and those little kids on average ask 200 questions a day. Now, they might not be asking that many to her. Some of them are shy, whatever. But when she comes home, we're excited to see her. But what are we doing? We're asking questions. She needs to decompress too. Every walk of life has some type of stress. That's the message. First of all, love each other, man. Like you're saying, give some grace to your wife when their spouse when you're coming they're coming home too. It's not all about us as a first responder either. So
Definitely, definitely. Steve, I truly appreciate you coming on, man. Like I said, it was a little message and you reciprocated, you read it, and you're like, yeah, absolutely. So that's all this is. That's how we communicate. Social media has its pros and cons, but to me, one of the best pros is I can reach out to you all the way in Kansas. I'm all the way in North Carolina, and made this happen and the good word was spread. So I appreciate you taking time to do this.
no, I appreciate you contacting me. How do you say your last name, by the way?
Beauvais.
Bove, that's what I was thinking. So a New Orleans family? What?
No, well, so my parents are originally from Haiti, so it's like a French derivative. New
Okay.
Orleans, sure. I mean, yeah. So I don't know. Ancestry, man, it's crazy.
How long have you been on job now?
I'm on getting on to approach my 17th year.
Okay. Well, good for you, brother.
Sir.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out because I love being on these podcasts to help spread the mission. Because again, like I said, you never know who's going to see it and reach out and want to be a part of what we're doing. And vice versa, someone sees it through my networking when I share it that you give me the link to share, someone might want to contact you. And that's what it's all about is the networking and helping each other out and loving each other as human beings, really.
Definitely, definitely. Especially in this day and age, man, we need to
Yep.
do that more so than ever. So I just want to say I appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you too.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.